Welcome to Decoding the Customer, a podcast about customer experience and how to realize customer-centric change in today's dynamic business world. I'm Julia Allfelt, certified customer experience professional, business advisor, and your host as we explore topics, trends, and best practices that are enabling brands to thrive in the age of the customer. Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time listening, welcome. If you're a regular listener, thanks, and it's great to have you back. This is episode 43, the first of four weekly episodes during the month of July. This month, I'm going to be exploring the topic of change. It was change in technology that empowered consumers and catapulted us into the age of the customer. Now that most organizations have accepted and hopefully fully embraced the fact that they need to become agile around the needs of customers, it's time to actually do this. And for most established businesses, that means realizing customer-centric transformation. This isn't just a little change, it's a paradigm shift. Throughout the month of July, I'm going to be exploring ideas and best practices that will help customer experience professionals be the much-needed agents of change. Returning listeners will know that the first episode of the month is always an interview episode, something to inspire and spark thinking before we dive deep into the practical how-tos during the mini masterclasses that follow later in the month. You might suppose that I'd start out with an interview featuring an organization that has successfully completed a major CX transformation, but not so. Today, I'm sharing an interview with the Chief Marketing Officer of TimeBank, a digital disruptor in the world of consumer banking. Unlike the incumbents in the market, many of which have been around for decades or even longer, TimeBank has only been around for a few years, and it's only launched its banking offering into the South African marketplace earlier this year, 2019. TimeBank has been able to build customer centricity into the DNA of its organization. And I hope that this episode inspires you to think, right, if I could hit that reset button, what would I do differently? Now, we all know that customer-centric transformation isn't that easy. But before we get mired in the details of how to drive change, it's important to imagine the ideal outcome. What would our customers want? How can we build a value proposition and then an organization around delivering on those needs? That's what TimeBank has done. And while it's still early days, keeping their eye on the prize of what customers want has served them well thus far. During our conversation, Luisa and I discuss how they're looking at customer needs differently, what it means to build a value proposition that appeals to attitudes rather than demographic market segments, and how passion and purpose have been the leadership team's guiding light. If you're seeking inspiration about the power of looking at customer centricity with fresh eyes, then stay tuned. If this episode gets you wanting to learn more about customer experience management, I'd encourage you to check out CX University. CX University has long been a supporter of the customer experience profession, and I'm proud to have them as sponsors of this episode. CX University offers a fantastic array of online courses, CCXP practice tests, webinars, instructor-led training, e-learning, and custom modules. CX University is a CXPA authorized resource and training provider, meaning that their materials have been reviewed and vetted by the association for alignment to the six core competencies that are in the CCXP exam. And CX University offers the option to earn six U.S. college credits through their courses. They have a flexible and affordable monthly subscription model and have offered an exclusive discount to listeners of this show. Listeners of the podcast can use the code PODCAST10 to get 10% off your first month subscription and help support the show. So thank you to CX University for your support. And with that, let's dive into today's show. As is the case with many markets around the world, the South African banking sector is amid a significant time of change. In episode 9 of the show, I featured an interview with Charles Nell and Sean Ray from Capitec Bank. Until recently, Capitec has been the new kid on the block, challenging the status quo of banking with their value proposition focused on ease and simplicity. They've grown steadily since their launch in 2001, but during the course of the last year, an even newer breed of banks have come knocking on the door, ready to nip at the heels of Capitec and the other established banking brands. Leading the change has been TimeBank, South Africa's first digital bank, which officially launched in early 2019. TimeBank has no branches, and its core banking systems are hosted securely in the cloud. This reduces its overheads and delivers significant cost savings that are passed on to its customers. Through a distribution partnership with retailers Pick n Pay and Boxer, Tyme Bank has kiosks located at stores across South Africa. Customers can open an account at these kiosks in under 5 minutes. We'll hear more about this from my guest, Louisa Mazinter, during our conversation, but an important part of Tyme's value proposition is the combination of their low banking fees paired with competitive interest rate returns. A digital bank without a traditional branch network certainly presents a paradigm shift in the world of banking. And the leadership team at Tyme Bank has put the customer at the center of everything since day one. No one is better positioned to share insights about this than Louisa Mazinter. Louisa is the Chief Marketing Officer at Tyme Bank. She's been with them since 2017, and her professional background has certainly primed her for this unique job. She's had a vast and diverse career, including being the Chief Innovation Officer at Mortimer Harvey, an adjunct faculty member at Gibbs Business School, and a consultant on strategy and change to some of Africa's biggest brands. I found Louisa's perspective to be highly refreshing. When you put the customer first, the rest can fall into place. This doesn't happen by accident, though. Tyme Bank's vision and purpose have guided the evolution of their value proposition and their organization. We're seeing a lot of disruption in the banking sector, but one could apply this to pretty much any industry. A summary of the insights from my conversation with Louisa, as well as more details about Tyme Bank, are available in the show notes for this episode, which are on my website, julia-allfelt.com or decodingthecustomer.com. Louisa, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
You're so welcome. It's wonderful to chat to you too.
Banking is one of the world's oldest industries, and it's been the beating heart of economies pretty much since the creation of money. And it's also something that's evolved over the millennia with the needs of markets and consumers, and the pace of change has definitely escalated in recent years with the sort of digital needs of consumers. What are South African consumers looking for in a bank and a banking experience?
Well, I think that South African consumers are looking for what consumers all over the world are looking for, which is a simple, easy, cost-effective way to do what they need to do. Consumers don't want banking. They want what banking enables, which is the ability to pay seamlessly and to have access to their money and to grow their money over time.
What do you think drives their decision to join or stay with a banking provider?
The way we look at it is that banks need to deliver a service that is seamless, that is almost invisible to the customer, that's there to support them in everything that they want to do to achieve their goals in life. We look at financial services and the things that really hinder people in getting access to financial services around three key pillars, and all of them really relate to access. The one is physical access. The way that banks have been set up since time immemorial is this physical space or place where you have to literally go to, and generally they're not ubiquitous bank branches, so it becomes really hard to get there, specifically if you're not living close to a branch, and it becomes an inconvenience to sit and get to a branch and then stand in a queue and wait to be served by someone. And for some people, that's highly inconvenient and it takes time out of their day-to-day lives. And for other people, it's actually impossible just to really be able to afford to get to a bank branch or to have the time to get off work and really spend time waiting for a bank. The other forms of access really are around financial access. And again, this has become a huge issue for many, many people, not just in this country, but all over the world, is that banking is expensive. In order to pay and cover the cost of this massive infrastructure, having physical branches, having people to man those branches, having massive back office spaces, banks have to pass all of those costs onto their customers. So in terms of financial access, it means that a lot of people can't afford what it costs to actually do business with current physical banks. And then the third issue around access is emotional access. The complexity that really surrounds banking, this edifice of fees, be it monthly fees and transactional fees, and the fact that banks are so inaccessible and aren't simple and easy to understand, creates this issue around, well, can I trust that this organization will look after the little money that I have and will help me understand it and what to do with it? So I think that those three key points of access can be massive barriers to financial services adoption. So it's physical, financial, and emotional access really make it hard for people to feel like they can trust the organization and they can actually achieve what they want to achieve in their lives.
And in terms of the financial access, putting this in perspective for my international listeners, South Africa has some of the world's highest banking fees. And when we look at that in comparison to per capita GDP, it's a big difference. So a $10 per month banking fee for somebody who lives in San Francisco is very different from a $10 banking fee for somebody who lives in the rural Eastern Cape or KwaZulu-Natal. It's in terms of their overall income and where they're putting their money.
Absolutely. It really is iniquitous. I think that it's important to note that the volume of people who are unbanked in South Africa is a small percentage or proportion of the volume of people in North America who are unbanked. And generally, it's for very, very similar reasons. Physical access, financial access, and emotional access. There's a large number of people in developing economies who just have never felt that they can take advantage of banking services. So I do believe that the problem is ubiquitous. Certainly from a financial access perspective, these high monthly fees, which have been a reality of the incumbents' business models for many years, if not, you know, some of our competitors are over 100 years old. And it's great for investors because it ensures an ongoing returns on their investment, but essentially it's not that great for customers. And I think that that, from our perspective, is the way we design this business from the ground up, is to say, what is it that's preventing consumers in this country and elsewhere in developing economies from getting access to financial services? And by getting access to financial services, by being able to join the economy and participate more in the economy and therefore start building an asset base for themselves moving forward and helping them achieve their bigger dreams and objectives. As human beings, we all have those same dreams. We all want to do the best by our families. We want to be able to participate in the economy, to earn money, to be able to pay for the things that we want in our lives. The financial services system, I believe, wasn't designed to make that easy for people, and it's become more of an issue around the world.
So it sounds like you guys have built a value proposition around access. What is your customer value proposition?
So we've been very clear that we're not going to be all things to all people. For us, it's really building very simple, everyday banking products that deliver value to our core target market. Mm-hmm. And the two key markets that we serve are consumers, generally, consumers who are looking for a better value proposition from their banks. So they don't want to pay a lot, they want easy access, and they want to feel that this is a bank that really believes in them and sees their potential and is willing to back them. Consumers across the board who have simple everyday banking needs. And the second core market for ourselves are small business. Small businesses who are being inadequately served by current banking propositions. And within those two key market segments, we've also try to really focus on the needs of our customers in everyday banking. So day-to-day banking, a basic transactional account, a really market-leading savings proposition, and then over time introducing credit products like personal loans, credit cards, etc.
So what I find very interesting about the way that you're talking about these segments is you're not talking about them in terms of income or geographic location. You're talking about them in terms of consumer needs.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting. So you're not saying, right, we're for wealthy customers or for less well-off customers. You're for customers who have simple everyday banking needs.
Absolutely. We've always said that we're targeting an attitude rather than a demographic. So we've always said that the business is focused on the mass middle market. But what we found really interestingly since we've launched, and we've only been in market now for 4 months, is that our proposition is as relevant to people slightly higher up in the income scale as it is to people slightly lower than that core mass middle market. So there's definitely a need in the market for what we have to offer across the board. And we talk when we position our brand as really being the bank that sees your potential, that looks at your potential over and above the way traditional banks would. So we look at the way you manage money, how focused you are on behaving in a responsible way with your money, and we will work with you to help you become more financially astute and therefore more able to take control of your financial future.
So the uptake of online and app-based banking has been huge in recent years, but that's largely been with banks that also have a traditional branch presence. Are consumers ready to move to a digital-only bank or a bank without a massive branch network?
I think the growth trajectory that we're showing says that consumers are looking for more value. They are looking to try other options when it comes to financial services. Specifically, I think what really sets us apart from a pricing perspective is our very low fee proposition. And the other thing that sets us apart is our very high interest that we offer on savings. And different consumers are responding to those components of the value proposition very powerfully. Since our launch, which was on the 24th of February, we've grown to 400,000 customers, wow, which is quite substantial. And that growth rate, I think, from everything that we've heard, is one of the fastest growing digital banks in the world. So we're very, very excited at the rate that it's growing. We also, remember, are not a pure digital bank. And I think this is another component of the value proposition that is really, really interesting, is that our channels to market are broader than just app and internet banking and web, which are the channels that most digital banks have. We obviously have a call center and various other things, but I think the one thing that sets us apart is our partnership with our retail partners, Pick n Pay and Boxer. So we have built a physical presence in the form of a kiosk, which allows us to onboard customers, in other words, to open a bank account for them without any documentation in under 5 minutes. And we've located those kiosks. At the moment, it's over 650 kiosks around the country in Pick n Pay and Boxer stores, but we are rolling out by the end of July, we should be around 730 of these points of presence. Now, those points of presence, if you compare them to our competitors, we compare really, really well to all of the major banks who have branches in the region of about somewhere between 640 and 800. So from day one, we had a presence in as many branches from an account opening perspective. And then the second component of that distribution strategy is our ability to handle cash. So cash withdrawals are pretty straightforward in retailers, but what makes us unique is that on the day we went live, which was in Feb, we had 14,300 equivalent of an ATM, which are till points. So customers could come and deposit money as well as withdraw money at those till points, just like they do at an ATM, but at a fraction of what you currently pay to withdraw and deposit money.
Because you don't have to worry about the cash management.
Absolutely. That's what Pick n Pay and Boxer are really, really good at. They do it every day.
Yeah.
So it really was an inspired strategic decision made by our founders when they started the business, is to look at doing what we do really well, which is the digital back end and the banking services, and to partner with retailers to actually deliver the cash handling.
So calling Tyme Bank a digital-only bank is actually incorrect. We should be calling it maybe a branchless bank or...
The reason that we can confidently say that we're a digital bank is that our back end sits in the cloud, whereas all of the big banks in this country and many, many banks around the world, they rely on on-premise infrastructure. They have to create their own tech data centers, etc., where all of the processing happens. Okay. We host all of that in the cloud.
That's
so that makes us a digital bank. The fact that our distribution is a hybrid between digital and physical is, I think, what makes our model unique.
So how does a digitally led experience then change the overall customer experience?
I think that it talks to the access word again. From a physical access perspective, you can open a bank account from the comfort of your own couch. You can open it at home. You can walk into a Pick and Pay or a Boxer, and you can bank where you shop. In other words, instead of having to go to a branch, you can go to the place where you normally do your retail shopping, and you can either open an account, withdraw money, or deposit money at a fraction of the cost that will cost you anywhere else. I think that that ease of access, the physical access, really makes a big difference in terms of the hybrid model. And I think that we're very lucky in our partners, as there's a certain trust quotient that comes with the partnership that we have with Pick and Pay, with Boxer, and with Visa, who is our card supplier. So we're a real bank, we're a credible bank, but we've just managed to take all of these massive overheads out of the picture in order to deliver real value. And if you just compare our staff quotient, we currently sit on about 120 people in our business compared to our competitors, who sit anywhere between 14,000 and 50,000 staff members. Now, just the pure cost of having all of those people to deliver on those day-to-day banking services, you can understand why we're able to extract all of the cost.
So you guys have really changed the channels through which consumers would do their banking and interact with the brand. Do you think that that impacts a customer's relationship with the brand? Is the relationship that somebody has with Time Bank different than what they would have from one of the other traditional incumbent banks, or do you see it as the same?
I think that because we become part of the day-to-day lives of our customers, because we're easily accessible, we're there wherever they go shopping, we have a presence, we make it easy for them to do their day-to-day banking, I think it certainly does impact on their lives. They're able to use their cell phones or able to use the retail outlets in order to actually do the transactions that they need to do just as easily as just as seamlessly. So those people who are empowered by and really love technology, they can do their banking on their phones. Those people who need to feel that there's a physical place where they can go to look someone in the eye and touch and feel cash, they can do that as well with us. So we've kind of solved all of those problems, we believe.
Great. So from what I've heard, it seems like Time Bank is a highly customer-centric business.
Yes.
It's also a relatively new organization. So the leadership team has had the luxury and the responsibility of embedding customer centricity into the organizational DNA. How has the organization built customer centricity into its strategy and culture?
I don't know that we needed to build it in. I think it was there from day one. I think it's certainly in the passion for creating a financial inclusion solution for customers. That's in the DNA of the founders. The people who've been in this business from day one have all come in with this real passion for making banking more accessible to consumers throughout the country. And you can feel it. It's a tangible thing. People who come into our business come in with this incredible passion for making a difference to people's lives. And those people who've coming in expecting a normal, standard, institutional working environment are either pleasantly or unpleasantly surprised. We're a small team of focused, entrepreneurial people who really want to make a difference to people's lives.
So as the organization evolves and grows, how is the leadership team ensuring that this focus on the customer isn't lost? For example, last year, I interviewed the head of customer experience at Airbnb, and we were talking about this, how Airbnb, a similar story, the founders, highly customer-centric, have built it into the fiber of the organization. But for them, they're growing hand over fist. So now the question is, right, as they grow so quickly, how can they make sure that they keep that essence within the organization, that it doesn't fade away as they have to grow rapidly?
It's a really good question. What we've said is that as we grow, and we have pretty steep growth targets, because of the way we've designed and structured the business, we're not going to have to grow the number of people in proportion with the number of customers. So we will always be a small, lean and mean team. Mm-hmm. That's the one point. The other one is that we communicate quite extensively internally. So every Monday, the entire company, the whole of South Africa, we have our global team in Hong Kong, and then we have a development team in in Vietnam, all of us get onto one Zoom chat and we have what we call an all hands. And what we do at that all hands is everybody who's got some interesting news to share presents it to the entire company, and anybody from the company can ask questions, can give input. And we really want to maintain that level of transparency and openness and communication in the business. And we're actively doing that.
So building customer centricity and building customer-centric strategy and user-friendly experiences in from the start is a really important first step. But as the business gains customers and the products and services evolve, it's important to have structures in place to manage those experiences. How does TimeBank currently actively manage and measure customer experience?
What we do is we monitor and track everything. So being a digital bank and having a central view of our customers, we're able to track and monitor how customers are interacting with us and where they're having challenges and where they're really having great seamless experiences. So we track that every single day and we report on that back into the executive team. And because we're a small team, we're able to be fairly agile in our ability to identify and resolve issues. The other thing that we're able to do with the central view of customer is we're able to intervene with messaging and communication to help drive customers through the paths that are going to be the most efficient and effective for them. Digital engagement is a hugely important part of what we do. It's not just in the core banking processes, but obviously everywhere that we interact with customers in the digital space. So on social media, through our digital channels, through our direct marketing channels, et cetera, we're able to give people the information they need in order to achieve what they want to do. It's easy to say, really hard to do.
Yeah.
And we're in an incredibly fortunate position that we're not sitting with legacy systems.
Yeah.
We really are building and designing from scratch. So we are able to design the structures specifically from a data structure perspective that allow us to get a more holistic view of our customers and what they need. So yeah, we can respond to that.
It's much easier to engineer that as it should be from the start than it is to re-engineer and connect the spaghetti wire that is legacy systems, for sure. Is TimeBank using traditional customer experience metrics like customer satisfaction, net promoter score, effort scores, anything like that? What are your metrics and measures?
Yes, we're in the process of capturing that data. We're 4 months old, so we really are setting our baseline at the moment, and we are tracking and measuring all of that. Certainly from my perspective, busy putting in place the brand health scores. We're putting in place the customer experience across their whole life cycle with us, those mm-hmm. kinds of scores. Trying to do some attribution modeling as well to really see where we're having the best impact, where we're providing the best service. We track all of our touch points in terms of being able to monitor people's response. And then we observe in the social space how people are engaging with us. And again, we share that data across the business as well.
So TimeBank is clearly offering something that's really unique and different from the traditional banking experiences that are out there. Do you think that TimeBank is disrupting the marketplace?
Oh, undoubtedly disrupting the marketplace. The reason I can say that with a great amount of confidence is that specifically on the financial access stuff from that month that we launched, which was February, all of the competitors bar one have created low price entry level transactional accounts, either reducing the fees on existing accounts or introducing new accounts into the market. So I think we've definitely stirred things up a bit, which is great. It's what we wanted to do. And our competitors are looking to remain relevant to a target market that is value conscious and are looking for more cost-effective ways to do their banking. I hope that this continues because I think it's a great starting point. I mean, for us, all of the responses that we've seen in the marketplace are fantastic because they're great for customers. And we're in this to make customers' financial lives easier. And we're delighted that the industry is responding. However, we still remain substantially better priced than our competitors. And we're working really hard to create a great service experience for our customers.
What do you think will ultimately be the fallout from that disruption? Will there be winners and losers? Is it too early to
I think it's too early to call. I think that there will be winners, and the winners are the customer. If the industry as a whole looks at ways to make the banking experience less painful and more cost effective and create more access, I think that overall it's good for customers.
What do you think is the future of banking? If we were having this conversation 5 to 10 years from now, what kind of banking experiences would we be talking about?
I think the future of banking is really focused on making the customers' lives easier and giving people and customers a seamless experience where banking isn't such a grudge purchase, that it actually is an enabling service that they engage with. And certainly our focus is on giving customers the tools and the knowledge to actually take back control of their own financial lives and giving them the ability to achieve what they want to achieve in their lives. So as I said, it's not about banking for banking's sake. It's what banking enables in customers' lives that is important. And that's where we are 100% focused.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Louisa Mazinter. The team at Time Bank has built a digitally led experience that still fulfills customers' needs for tangible in-person banking. I really like that they focused on the kernel of customer needs, which revolve around physical, financial, and emotional access to banking products, and that these products help consumers address other needs in their lives. When a brand accepts that the sphere of consumer needs extends far beyond just their products, it opens up a new way of thinking about how those products and services might be offered. I was also struck by the importance of vision, mission, and purpose as key elements in the organization's DNA. We see these same traits in some of the world's most successful customer-centric brands. So I really hope that Time Bank will be able to hold on to this as they grow. If you're enjoying the podcast, I invite you to share the program with others or head on over to iTunes and rate the program. This helps others discover the show. I'll be back every Thursday this month with new CX Mini Masterclass episodes. These episodes are designed to be punchy, bite-sized overviews of key customer experience concepts and practical approaches that you can use. For the month of July, I'm focusing on change and will be featuring insights from some top customer experience thought leaders. So be sure to listen in or subscribe for updates when new shows go live. This episode was sponsored by CX University, a CX training company offering a broad array of customer experience learning options, including the convenience of learning anywhere and anytime with their online program, e-learning modules, and CCXP practice exams. CX University is an accredited resource and training provider, and they offer a flexible and affordable monthly subscription model. At the time of publishing this episode, course subscriptions start at just $75 per month and include access to CCXP practice exam questions. Listeners of the podcast can get 10% off their first month subscription by entering the discount code PODCAST10 at checkout. If you're looking for help realizing customer-centric change in your organization, please don't hesitate to get in touch. My contact details are on my website, or you can reach me on LinkedIn and Twitter. My handle is @JuliaAllfelt.